Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
Today, we'll be covering the first war of Armageddon, which is actually the fourth or fifth war there, but just
this
the first
planet
one under the
jacked.
New name.
Yeah. Don't go there.
Yeah, exactly. Also, I do want to open with an important thing as we get into War of Armageddon. There's a Black Library book called The Emperor's Gift. That's what a lot of this is going to come out of. Go read that or listen to it. It's one of the better books they have. Although I didn't love the first half. Second half I really liked, but the first half, it was fine.
That slams. They set up a lot of things. I like it.
I was falling asleep in the first half of it. And then I think I actually did skip like three chapters. Cause like I stopped caring. And then it got good. So anyway, 40K Lorecast, weekly show in the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Please continue to follow and comment. The comments really do help us out. You guys are doing a rock and roll job. We're doing great, and I couldn't be happier with it. So thank you. If you like the cast and you want some more of Brad and I, click the link to our YouTube page where you have the 40K Lorecast. There you have some of our earlier stuff converted over to imagery, our Q&A sessions, and our other show, The History of 40K. It's actually also available on Spotify, I should mention, or podcasting platforms in general. But anyway, that's there. And then in the show notes, there's also a link to our Patreon. Massive thank you to everyone's contributed. We're actually using that Patreon right now to explore some expansion. Thank you guys for contributing. It allows us to do some more stuff on YouTube, some more stuff, actually even other podcasting areas, and just kind of expand out in general to offer more to you. So thanks for doing that. Our Patreon is $4.99 a month. That gets you this show and the History of 40K ad-free. Or if you want to swim in a lake with the best name, if you're an immature adult, it's 16.81 sol. So you can listen to our cast while eating pollo la brasa and looking at Lake Titicaca. Because the food in Peru is so good. I think it's the best food in the planet. But that's also because their country has all of the climates. You've got the Amazon jungle, the Pacific coast, the Andes mountains, and really, really, really fertile land from glacial runoff. And the cuisine's nuts. Anticucho, causa, lomo saltado, and of course, pollo la brasa, which I've actually built my own rotisserie in my house so I can make pollo la brasa with huacaina sauce. And I look forward to much you trying to figure out how I know what all that crap is. Anyway, lastly. Nope. Put it that way. Nope. I was taught how to make all that stuff. So lastly, we have a Discord. I always pump the Discord. The Discord now is well over 11,000 members and growing. It's a great place to interact with us. I know a lot of you had some issues with the Salamander cast because the Discord has told me so. Sorry-ish. But it's a really great place to interact with Brad and I. It's also a great place to interact around this in general. I do know actually quite a few of our Discord members on a personal level because some of them I've met them at tournaments and at events. And a lot of them have raved about how great the Discord is for getting into the game and learning about, hey, I have some kind of noob level questions that I don't want to put on something like a Reddit. Our Discord's perfect for that. But it's also a really fun place for more veteran players. Just come in there, talk about literature, talk about things you like, talk about the history of 40K that you like. Come on in. It's an incredible place, and I cannot thank you all enough for joining it. And if you haven't joined it, jump on in. It is also completely free, like all Discords should be. I look forward to the negative comment from random people. So with that, let's get to Armageddon. All right. First and foremost, what is Armageddon? And Armageddon is complicated. It's a planet in the upper right sector of the galaxy.
The northeast?
Nope. Upper right.
So northeast?
Upper right. It was one of my favorite comments in Discord. This was today. So you guys can figure out a time of when I record this versus time of release. But when they've now announced there's a total war coming for Warhammer 40K. And someone says, do you think the map will be northeast, southwest, or up, left, down, right? And I'm like, unfortunately, I know which way it'll be. But Holy Terra is in the Sol system. And obviously, Holy Terra is in the segmentum Sol. So that's where Armageddon sits. It's the smallest space of all the segmentums, but it's also the most defended and the most active.
Not even just the most defended, it's the most active. There's just constantly stuff going on here.
Right, because there are bigger worlds in other segmentums outside of segmentum solar.
100%.
Yeah. But and like any good empire, the vast majority of the function of the empire sits in these areas. So you've got Forge Worlds, Night Wards, etc. Segmentum Solar is effectively the backbone of the Imperium. Although the 500 worlds of Ultramar are kind of moving that way a little bit in current lore. We'll see where it goes. The reason I bring all that up is that any conflict that occurs on a world within the Segmentum Solar is a direct threat to the Imperium because it's so close to Sol and can disrupt all the, you know, munition movements, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a very big deal.
It's a staging point. It's around, they stage from here and they go other places, and it's heavily defended because they want to make sure that you can always get whatever you need, guns, people, everything. If you need hubcaps, you got them. We go from there. And this has been, it's also a great source of pride because of the fact that it's one of the first reconquered when we had the Great Crusade in the thing, in the histories. But it's a big deal to make sure that this is always safe. It's also kind of like a beacon for the Empire. The Imperium says, this is ours. I mean, they say that a lot with everywhere, but this is a thing where they don't let any threats go unanswered quickly.
That's fair. And so the tricky thing about Armageddon is it doesn't belong in Segmentum Solar. It's there, but doesn't belong there. And so I'm going to talk about why for a minute, because it does matter a lot as we cover a lot of the Armageddon issues. So during the War of the Beast, we covered this. Give that a listen if you want. But if in effect, during the Great Crusade, the Emperor and his legions found themselves engaged in this protracted battle in what's called the Ulanor system, primarily on the planet Ulanor. It's located in, we actually don't know where Ulanor was. It's believed to have been on the right side of the galaxy somewhere, but it's been scrubbed from all Imperial records. And the planet was home to an Orc Empire, war boss Urlok Urg. The Empire was, in effect, the last major threat in the galaxy to the Emperor during the Great Crusade, because this is M30. The Eldar are still reeling from the birth of Slaanesh. The Jukari are hiding within the webway. The Harlequins are hiding in the webway. The craft
they're doing Harlequin stuff. Craftroad's trying to figure that. Craftroad's taking a step and having an existential crisis and wandering around the galaxy. Tower being Tau.
There are no Tau. The Tau don't exist. Yeah. The Tyranids are 10,000 years away from joining the galaxy. There's like 5 Necrons who are awake anywhere. And the Votan didn't technically exist, but now totally technically exist.
But they're in the core.
They're in the
core. The biggest thing about this is the Emperor says, if I can quell this, then I can go do my secret projects in the basement, which is...
which didn't work out very well.
Worked out perfectly.
After defeating the orcs with the help of the Luna Wolves and the Ultramarines and the White Scars, because this is heresy, so GW still cared about the White Scars. They don't write books about them anymore. Not my fault. They went, White Scars. Oh, yeah, them. The White Scars get the ex-girlfriend treatment by GW sometimes. They're like, who are you talking about?
After they did this, they had the big meeting and they declared Horus the War Master. Emperor went and did his thing in the basement, but there was no ramifications on those actions whatsoever. But Ulanor was just colonized and just became part of the Imperium.
And about 1,000 to 1,500 years later, the timeline's tricky here. The world just went dark, and it was unnoticed. More uncared about, because we're talking M32. The Imperium is now recovering from the Horus Heresy, thanks to Gilliman and the Ultramarines, who actually made it so they were recovering, as opposed to all the other, loyal factions who went, everything's broken. I'm going over there, though. But the problem is that at this time, if a world went dark, it was kind of a normal occurrence, especially a world far away from Segmentum Solar. We'll go figure it out later. And so we'll go check on it between now and 10,000 years from now. However, in the case of Ulanor, they were going to check on it a lot sooner than that. And that's because
the War of the Beast started there.
So not long after Ulanor, the Beast invades, kicking off the War of the Beast. We did 3 casts on this, so go back and listen to those. But in effect, as the War of the Beast progressed, they eventually realized the origin of the armies of the beast were from the planet Ulanor itself. That is the homeworld for the beast, etc. So after one pseudo-successful, pseudo-failed attempt, they go back again and kill the beast, beasts, beast eye. I don't know how it made.
There's how about, a lot of, I think you meant to say beasties.
Beasties, yeah, there's a bunch of them. Let's go with that. You know, yeah. But that story's just the beginning. And so that kind of gets us to a fun point. The next bit is where, as always, the Admechs screw everything up for everybody. They make great stuff, really great stuff, but it always comes with a catch. They are the monkey's paw of 40K factions.
Well, come on now. You can't put this level of temptation in front of the Admech, because the orcs showed up with force fields, just planet world destroy, sun destroying, one of them was supposed to be, weapons. Yeah. And they also had, oh yeah, the ability to teleport planet-sized objects across the galaxy. And the Admech went, yeah, we need that. And they effectively said, you need to get rid of all this. And the Admech went, 100%, we're definitely going to do that.
It's a lot funnier than anything else to me, because when the orcs dropped one of the planets, the rocks, a moon. Yeah, their attack moon right in orbit. After the Imperium, thanks to the Space Marines, were able to stop it, the Admechs started taking it apart almost instantly and were just like losing their mind on, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened. I love this. I love this. I love this. I love this. And the Imperium was kind of like, all right, you can have that. And the Admech insisted they'd figure out how, that they'd gotten all the technology. We can make this work. So what happens next is, once the war ends and they defeat the beast, they have an issue. The planet Ulanor is covered in orc relics and orc technology and all these things. And the Imperium looks at this and says, if another orc takes over here, this is a massive threat to the Imperium. We can't risk even just destroying this. This place has to cease to exist. And the Admechs say, I gotcha, bro. We'll take care of it.
Yeah, pinky promise. And they said, wait a minute, we're for sure going to teleport this into their own sun. They're just going to launch it in there, going to destroy this. Because like John was saying, if another orc war boss hook starts, they're using this, all of these things that keep showing up and we keep having more and more orc problems. There's obviously power from here. We need to not have the orcs having all these technologically advanced, even for us, let alone orcs. We need to do something
for
with
us,
it.
So they're like, the Eldar, this stuff was advanced.
Yeah, true.
This is Necron, pushing towards Necron technology. Yeah.
So the problem is that the Admech, after the pinky promise, and definitely had cross behind their back, because they went, yeah, man, we're definitely not launching this planet into the sun. We don't know. We haven't harvested every single piece of technology from this. So they said, let's just launch it somewhere else and then we'll say that it went into the sun, because it's pretty hard to tell if you kill the planet, if you teleport it somewhere. So they went, well, let's just teleport it not into the sun, and then we'll just have as long as we need to figure out all this stuff.
Sort of. That's the problem. It's like, as always, the Admech don't think all the way through, because Brad's totally right. If you teleport a planet into a sun, the sun doesn't care. It just dissolves. So it's like, all right, well, that was like, it blows up the sun. Yeah. And so the Admech decide, to Brad's point, we need more time to excavate every last minuscule piece of this planet. So we're going to teleport it somewhere else. But they also decide to be super lazy about it. Instead of teleporting it somewhere really far away, maybe next to an important forge world. Whoa.
John, that would be inconvenient to keep sending people there to do stuff. We want to be quick. Come on now.
So they teleported the Segmentum Solar. I'll be honest with you, I guarantee you a couple of them were like, why don't we just bring it into the Sol system? We'll replace Saturn. Somebody be like, no, someone will notice, you know? But they find this wonderful system called Armageddon.
Because nothing would ever happen bad on a place called Armageddon.
So they Alderaan the existing planet there. So it's gone. Because remember, anything in Segmentum Sol is already marked by the Imperium. So what the Admech did was fairly clever. They found a planet that resembled Armageddon a little bit and just blew it up. And then they teleported Armageddon to where that planet is. So that way, no one would really notice, oh, it's there. Because the only thing that the Admech can't have is rogue traders show up. Because they can't have a new planet and a bunch of rogue traders are like, hey, I went to this planet. It's got all these great artifacts all over it. Because that message is going to the Imperium. So the Admech do a very clever, like, switcheroo here. And the only problem the Admech run into is that Armageddon gets labeled for colonization. So while they're working overtime, and they do a good job of scrubbing the planet full of the technology and ripping everything out of there.
They should
have blown the planet up.
Yes.
And they never got a chance to blow the planet up because all of a sudden a trillion humans show up in colony ships.
It got marked as this is a perfect planet to make a hive world. And a hive world is a prime demand for the Imperium because that's the people that make everything. So they send trillions of folks over. And the Admech is basically doing their emo kid sad. Come on, man.
Yeah.
We only had forever to look through this place.
Yeah, we only had like 6,000 years. But where this is interesting is, and I would like to point this out a little bit on cast, especially because of where this cast is going to go. When we talk about 40K, magic is real. We talk about things like machine spirits, some of the weird customs with the incense and all that stuff. Yeah, they look silly, but they're not. They are real. These things do work. Because don't forget, demons are a thing. Magic is a thing. So a world that's had this much death and conflict on it probably has an attachment to the warp that's beyond anything else.
It's a beacon. It's a giant lighthouse in the middle of the ocean of the warp saying, come on over here. Let's do some stuff, baby.
And so moving it halfway across the galaxy doesn't change that. It wasn't the system. It was the planet. So from there, the next piece of kind of building the story of Armageddon I want to get to are the Grey Knights. Feels like a left turn, but they're going to come up a lot pretty soon. We talked about the Grey Knights. We covered them a little bit a while back, but I want to dive in a bit more about what they are. Because it's been over a year since we talked Grey Knights. I had to look that up. The Grey Knights are not a normal chapter of Astartes. And when I say not normal chapter, we've got Minotaurs, Carcharodons, Terror Tigers. Rawr. Never going to let that go, by the way. They're all space marines, but just of an unknown founding. They're all at their core still Astartes. Well, also, there's quite a few that will actually come up over the course of these casts. The Grey Knights are really space marine 2.0. They don't have a Primarch because their gene seed is the Emperor. They are imbued with the Emperor himself.
Yeah, that's how they get the Aegis on this. They are uncorruptible.
Exactly. So they're a bit special. And they have all the rest of the regular space marine bits, the organ implantations, the strength, the power, the speed. But then they also get the psyker piece too. So they get the Emperors shoved into them, making them immune to corruption and increasing a lot of their power. But also all Grey Knights are psykers. And not like the I can cast smite psyker. These are some of the most powerful psykers in the galaxy. Just a regular dude walking around would laugh at a librarian. Just like, good. You're adorable.
I do also love the fact they go through a crazy process. Also, hey, man, how do you become a Grey Knight, John?
Oh, there's no aspirants.
You volunteer? Exactly. You're like, hey, you've checked a bunch of boxes and have a bunch of latent abilities, and we want you, whether you want to or not.
Yeah. Well, no Grey Knight, and they cover this in the novel, but the Grey Knights, they actually block out all of their memories from beforehand. Grey Knights have no idea where they came from. They just wake up one day as a Grey Knight with a number, and then they earn a name later. Yeah, but so
also, hold please, sir. You make that process sound like it was, hey, they gave you that pill, and now you forget your past. No.
They psychically wipe your mind. I mean, it's with brutality.
Mind-scrubbing torture to make you forget. And it's not like you're like, hey, take the blue pill and you'll forget everything that happened. No.
Yeah. If the blue pill gave you the GI tract of bread.
You know, that's hurtful and true.
Not as hurtful as your GI tract is after spicy food.
or any food.
Except chewy. But like, yeah. Brad answers some 5-alarm wings. Oh, so you want me to die or wish I was dead? One of the two, maybe both. So the main thing about the Grey Knights is what we're going to is that though that upliftment process explodes their psychic abilities and makes them some of the best fighters of the Immaterium in the galaxy, which also that little bit I just said there matters to the other key part about the Grey Knights. No one knows they exist. This is really important. The Grey Knights, they are part of the Inquisition under Ordo Malleus.
Yeah, I'm not, okay. Pause on that one. Nobody knows they exist. Grey Knights have been seen so much, even though they continue to pretend that they haven't.
At the point of this story, that's true. So my point is, when we get to this, we're talking about 444 of M40. The Grey Knights are not well. Because of what happens in Armageddon, they become a much more known commodity, although they're still not fully known. Yeah.
True, but I'm just saying, it's one of those things where everybody just kind of pretends they don't know the Grey Knights.
Well, we can jump into that a little bit. So the Grey Knights are known by the Inquisition, obviously the Lords of Terra, and then we're not even sure if it's every chapter master, but at least select chapter masters
of these stories are aware.
It just gets tricky because, like, you have chapter masters of some of the small chapters. I don't know.
True, it's some of those, yes.
Go that's all this. Yeah, exactly. On the mains, 100% they all know. But that's just a piece. And there's probably some administrators who know, yada, yada. But the job of the Grey Knights is to intervene whenever chaos appears in the galaxy. So they rapidly deploy and then secretly destroy whenever any Immaterium manifests in the Materium. But the key thing is we're talking demonic forces. So when demons are present, they'll banish them and they'll even put up wards to make them not come through. But that's only part of their job. The other part of their job is a little bit convoluted. And Brad and I, we've had this debate numerous times here.
Yes, and I was just supposed to say, yes, we have.
Yeah, this is M40. So we're talking about right now, this cast is going to be all about 444 of M40. And knowledge of chaos or the arch enemy is a secret, or is it? The timeline here is really goofy because sometimes the citizenry knows of chaos. Sometimes it knows nothing of chaos. Sometimes it knows a little bit about chaos, but not how powerful chaos is. And other times they know absolutely everything about it. You know, it's just all over the place. And one of the jobs for the Inquisition has been for a long time, and even goes into now what we're busy M42 now, cleansing when people learn about chaos. Sort of, kind of, maybe not always. The Grey Knights take that to a different level. The Grey Knights will cleanse a population who have had any experience with chaos, but they will also cleanse anyone who's seen them or had any interaction. And an example of this, interestingly, also involved Angron. In M38, Angron and 50,000 berserkers hit the Imperium. And for 200 years, there was a war. 4 Space Marine chapters, 2 Titan legions, 30 guard regiments, and the Grey Knights had to get involved after hundreds of worlds were burned by Angron. No one knows about that except for the Grey Knights. And a few people who were, I mean, this is at this point where this is M38, so everyone's dead except for these Space Marines.
Yeah, you weren't super excited if you just got saved by the Grey Knights.
Yeah, you died. Now, as we were discussing, the Astartes leadership kind of knows about the Grey Knights, and that's because the Astartes do fight chaos, but we're still not even sure how much they know about Grey Knights. We know they know about the Inquisition, obviously, and the Ordo Malleus. But as far as, oh, hey, there's a battle brother that exists that's like you, but actually is made specifically for fighting demons. It's one of those ones where my assumption is that they will know about the Grey Knights if their chapter was engaged in a conflict that the Grey Knights had to assist in. But you do have chapters who are going to spend most of their time fighting against Xenos or maybe even just cultists. You don't need the Grey Knights for that. The Grey Knights don't get involved with cultists. They don't get involved with, because you're going to have, if the Grey Knights had to cull, or they just had to cull every single time a cultist or rebellion came up, there would be 11 people in the Imperium.
Yes.
No. It's like, no. So yeah. The grants only get involved when an actual demon makes manifest, because it's like, oh, when you've seen a Lord of Change, they decide, no, you didn't, and don't tell anybody, and we're going to make sure that those two things are true.
So let's get into Armageddon itself, though.
Yeah, let's jump into this. Let's start in the warp. Inside the Eye of Terror, the Chaos forces are always fighting each other. Not always, but mostly. You get little times they band together.
It's almost always.
Well, yeah, they basically fight with each other nonstop, and then every so often do the stepbrothers, did we just become best friends? And then later decide, no, we were not best friends. But you are going to get Abaddon Crusades, because at this point, oh, I forgot, it's 444 of M41. Sorry if I said M40 earlier. It's M41.
And we've had 12 Abaddon Crusades at this point in time. Yeah. So the Imperium is starting to really fortify up. Because also a lot of the later crusades are him bringing more and more stuff. So Imperium has wildly, Cadia is comical at this point in time before the 13th crusade. The fortifications, there's several of the guns. And one of the big things for the Grey Knights is when you're monitoring for demonic incursions, you're looking into the warp. Well, it's not super easy because there's ebb and flow. There's a lot of things, but warp powers just cause warp disturbances. So that's where you start focusing what you're looking at.
Exactly. And the Imperium learned at this point that basically when a large warp storm start up, something's coming. That's the best way to explain it. There's a red moon on the horizon type stuff that, you know, when we think about like more modern day Earth stuff, these are bad omens start coming. Now, inside the Materium, the World Eaters are maybe the least organized and the most chaotic of all the legions. This is the downside of being beholden to the god of war, conquest, and combat, is everyone's constantly trying to prove themselves.
Yeah, the World Eaters got broken into warbands.
But by choice. It wasn't like we've been broken into. It wasn't.
It was by choice after Karin decided that.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. By choice. It wasn't like when we say, broken apart, it wasn't like someone did something to the Legion.
Oh, no.
The Legion apart. They just, every individual member of the World Eaters wants to be the greatest World Eater. So they don't really high five and team up. Hey, buddy, you got my back? Well, no.
They effectively become mercenaries for the most part. Mm-hmm. They just keep joining into whoever is going to war and wants great war. You're almost orcish. Promising them a fight, they go with you. Again, we talked about this in another cast. I can only imagine a World Eater's battle barge of getting to the battle.
Oh, it's gonna be a nightmare. Yeah. So apparently, though, after 10,000 years in the warp, Angron does the Wreck-It Ralph Zangief, where it's like, I am bad guy, but not bad guy. I mean, he's a terrible guy, but he decides that he, instead of like an M38 when he hit the galaxy, it was him and Berserkers. They were just in the galaxy killing stuff. He decides he wants to unify his legion now. So he takes a different step. Instead of being Berserkers, he's grabbing everybody. But he needed a way to do it. So if only there could be a big shiny object. And what happens next, by the way, is more orc than it is chaos, because Angron really needs something to go his way.
Okay. This I love. I know it's stupid, but I just love it. Because like all I could think of is Angron sitting on a giant throne going, I really need a way to unify, get everybody together, and storm into the Materium. And a space Hulk just appears up
in front of him. Yeah,
like. He's like, he just wished upon a star. And yeah. Speaking of wishing upon a star, I love that they say that the name of the Hulk was the Devourer of Stars. You're like, it did in my mind, he didn't rename that. It just had a plaque on it that said
the Devourer of Stars. Yeah, just appears next to him. I assume with a little like a ding sound, like would it come in with it? And then Angron just does the F it we ball maneuver and grabs everybody. He grabs his legion, like everyone within, like not Karn, but everyone but Karn. Come on, a bunch of demons jump on, the cultists who are in the warp. They all went Noah's Ark 2x2 style into the Destroyer of Stars and then decided to let Korn take the wheel. Let's see where we go. So
I just have to say that I'm assuming this operation was Operation YOLO Swaggins.
Oh, yeah. Everyone get in the ship. Where's it going?
Like, stuff. What? Don't ask stupid questions.
Yeah. So somewhere cool. Shut up.
Get in, idiot. Yeah.
So back at the Ethereum, stuff starts going haywire.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
I am super excited to announce this episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. With a new year upon us, it's a great opportunity to focus on you. The new year doesn't require a new you, just maybe a less burdened you. And therapy is a great way to identify the things that are weighing you down and holding you back, allowing you to better understand your motivations, emotions, and relationships. As someone who has struggled quite a bit over the years with anxiety and at times even depression, I cannot attest enough to the benefits of mental health professionals. Finding help allowed me to get through some of the tougher times in my life, and I will always recommend it to others. I mean, why do you guys think I paint models so much? With BetterHelp, you can be matched with quality therapists with care and reliability. BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you, helping you find the right therapist for your needs, while at the same time providing you flexibility to change amongst their over 30,000 therapists at any time. BetterHelp is also one of the world's largest online therapy platforms, having served over 5 million people globally. With the new year, don't omit your mental health from your goals. BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with a qualified therapist. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp.com. 40K Lorecast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings may vary. Not available in all states or situations. We start seeing massive warp storms everywhere. Standard sign. Chaos incursion is imminent, but from where? And so as this storm is progressing, the Grey Knights are searching the warp for any sort of movement, looking for where is this going to be. And the problem for the Grey Knights, this is really well covered in the book, it should be clear. They couldn't find it. No matter where they look, they don't see it anywhere. So they start getting worried. Like, something's up. We don't know what's going on. We should know what's going to happen next. And so as these warp storms, because it's not just localized the Armageddon system, it's throughout the galaxy, they start, like, the Grey Knights start sending people all over the place. At the same time, one of the big problems in warp storms is it disrupts travel. A warp storm is no different than if we go back to, you know, the naval eras of the globe where we had sailboats going all over the place. You get like a big storm comes through. There's no shipments that are coming in. So you start getting shortages of food and all those things. So uprisings start occurring all around the galaxy. And these uprisings are expected. The planetary defense forces actually know they're coming because, hey, there's a warp storm, so all the food's going to be late. Let's maybe prepare for that. And so these are all cultist, usually led uprisings. Some is just straight rebellion, but more often than not, there'll be a cultist led ones. And this is all because Alfred Lewis was right, simply put. People will eventually.
The Watergate reporter?
No, Alfred Lewis. We're always 9 meals away from anarchy. So you miss 9 meals and you will get anarchy. So it's been proven time and time again, and that's what you got here in Armageddon. So
I'm staying with Watergate. All right. This is funny. That is where my mind went. I'm like, I don't know how he's tying this in. Yeah.
So on Armageddon, let's get now to the meat and potatoes of this whole thing. So the world of Armageddon is a hive world. The world's made up of three continents. The game Civilization style, because it's really obvious why GW played Civilization. Some of the continents are larger than others, and some have more value. So each continent has a contingent of hives on it.
Sure, but there's a main continent that has.
Because you have to write a story.
No, yeah. But I'm saying, when one of the continents has two main hives, and they are named Armageddon Prime and Armageddon Secundus. Yeah, that's the main one. Yeah, that's.
And there's a giant thing of jungle separating them too. I played this in Civ 5. I know this planet. Out of nowhere, not really out of nowhere, it's expected with the shortages of the six hives around the planet, all have outbreaks of rebellion. It's food shortages, as you'd expect. And all the revolutions are put down pretty quickly, except on the main continent. And by the way, a lot of these had cultists in them, but they were just clapped out, no problem. However, Hive Primus proved to be pretty stubborn. Hive Secundus was able to put it down and get control. Yeah. But Hive Primus was a whack-a-mole.
Oh, it's so funny because you're like, hey, we've got a revolt over here. And then the farthest place away was another revolt. And they kept having to bounce.
This is all, but it's getting together. Hive Secundus gets their stuff together and they start actually moving to go help out Hive Primus. And that's when the Devourer of Stars blinks into existence right above Armageddon. And kind of like when the orcs with the War of the Beast arrive, it's not just a space station in orbit. It's a space station full of problems. Also, equally fun, as soon as this thing blinks into orbit, half the planetary defense forces just turn traitor. Just written in an instant.
And they instantly were not happy and letting them come down.
Yeah.
Not great for the planet.
Exactly. So this easily winnable revolution is now turning into an imminent disaster. The only thing that saves Armageddon is that there's another defender of the Imperium not far away. Unfortunately, it wasn't the Ultramarines, but it still is blue, and blue is still good. So we get the Space Wolves. Space Wolves and Logan Greenlaw, he's going to be critical in this cast a lot. They happen to be patrolling in this sector as a result of the warp storms. And they detect what's going on, and yeah, we're going to deal with that right now. Angron, World Eaters, Demons, they've all descended on the planet. Mostly around Primus, though, not around Secundus. And that's going to matter a lot in a minute. Angron and them obviously do pretty short work of section one.
Let's talk about the beginning, because the beginning, they actually graphically start wrecking people. And World Eater style, they start making spectacles of people also. Oh, yep. People are unbelievably demoralized. Like, we can't run away. I don't know if you're keeping score, man, but we just got our asses kicked. So luckily the wolves show up and not only start putting in strategic defenses, getting ready to smash, but also seeing them come down basically gives a morale boost that the planetary defenses actually start fighting back. Cause at this point in time, they were getting so overwhelmed. I don't even think they were trying to fight. They were just straight.
I mean, demons just showed up. So that's not really ideal.
I get it. Yes.
Or aware they exist.
I'm just saying that there's a lot of planetary defense positions fortified, heavily fortified, that didn't even matter because no one was bothering to stay because they were shitting their pants, you know?
Yeah, it's a pretty existential moment of what is no is kind of what we get into. But yeah, the other thing that does help, though, so they get the defenses going. This also, they're aided by the fact that this is before the rift in the galaxy. So the ability for a demon to exist outside of the Immaterium, inside the Materium, is low. And the larger the demon, the bigger the need of the draw of power to hold it there. Angron's a pretty big demon. And I should mention, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, he's surrounded by bloodthirsters. So this is a pretty big draw on the Immaterium. So in order to keep himself and his army tethered to the Immaterium, Angron can't move very quickly because he has to constantly raise monuments to Khorne, just piling skulls, burning pits of fire, whatever you're going to do, in order to keep himself there, which slows him down. Grimnar knows this, and Grimnar uses it to his own advantage.
One of the biggest things about it is he needs to have a constant slaughter to keep himself there. So Grimnar just starts to pull everyone back so they just don't have so much chaff to murder and keep going too.
And so Angron, and what Logan does is he kind of ranges this really well. So Angron will sit there and he'll raise a monument to Khorne. Well, around that monument, the link to the Immaterium is very strong, but the further you get from it, obviously the weaker it is. So Logan backs his forces up, not all the way, but just far enough that he's in tempting range of Angron and his forces. And then when Angron and his forces come in, Logan's at the very edge of kind of that power source, allowing him to be much more effective against them, like slaughtering them there. And he does this over and over again. There's some in the book, they talk about these stories, like they fight, they do a counterattack into one of the
rivers. Just trying to get it. Yeah, they're trying to get him to overextend so they can weaken their pull, because they actually are weaker. They're like actually physically weaker.
Exactly.
The less they have a connection to the Imperium. Yeah. So they're just easier to kill. And that's a big thing when you have people covered in brass armor that are as big as tanks.
Yeah.
Also soccer tossing tanks. So also Logan realizes, hey man, I need some help.
Yeah. So Logan does know about the Grey Knights. And so he puts in a call and says, hey, this is here. Now back to the Grey Knights. We jump back. Back on Titan, the Grey Knights receive the first reports from Armageddon, and it's worse than they ever could have imagined. Demon Primarch is back in the Primarch.
It is. Yeah, I was to say, we didn't realize or have any inkling that this happened is a big deal for them.
And they talk about it in the book, about they realize Angron was blocking them. They realize after the moment that Angron and the forces were blinding them to this. It's a well-written piece talking about, oh, and so they have this issue. They've got to get there now. Because Angron, we talk about Angron like hating Psykers, and he does hate Psykers, but he's also, because he is a demon prince of Khorne, he has a lot of, we'll call it warp power. Maybe it's not what we call their normal psychic power where he's manifesting and blessing, but yeah, he has a presence in the warp and there's a lot of warp flowing through him.
Oh, it was the thing is that it's not even just presence. He causes a mess in the warp.
Yeah. So the challenge for the Grey Knights, they're just not really prepared for this scenario at all. They've been spread out, assuming that there is some sort of like maybe greater demon, most likely some chaos sorcerers in play. The kind of thing like a dozen Grey Knights can take care of. Angron's a bit bigger of a lift. And because he blinded them to it, they're spread out. He's also too close to Sol for them to kind of let this thing go. So they take off. And all they have is 109 Grey Knights, which is not a lot, by the way. That is not a lot when you're fighting a Primarch.
I think what you're trying to say is the words we're looking for is not enough. Even just not a lot. Not enough.
Yeah, this is nothing. Because you're taking on not only a demon Primarch, but also the forces of Khorne. Look, Karn fans, I love Karn. I think Karn's more fun than Angron, but we're not going to pretend that they're on the same scale. This is the most dangerous being possibly in the Immaterium and the Materium. A very angry and fully powered Angron. Yeah, at least in combat. So, Grey Knights arrive. Logan then goes and meets with them. And this scene is epic. Again, really good book. The Grey Knights have put together a plan of action. The idea is they're going to teleport strike into the middle of the demonic forces and fight Angron directly. Because if they can banish him, then the rest of the forces would lose their attachment to the Materium, and all that's left would be cultists and Chaos Marines with no demonic support, which is, with the size of the force they have there, that won't be that hard to do. Now, the fun part about this plan is Angron is not by himself. He's got bodyguards, and his bodyguards, I assume there's 8 of them, but there might have been 80. Like, it's really not clear in the book. It's just, but there are a lot of bloodthirsters.
He has a actual retinue of bloodthirsters, which is, if you're going to go with a retinue of bloodthirsters is probably the most intimidating of them.
Yeah, it's not ideal. It's not ideal. And so what they need to have happen, if they're going to pull this off, is they have to have Angron and his forces distracted, which is what the Space Wolves were going to do. The Space Wolves were going to do a full assault into Angron and his forces to distract them while Angron's turned the other way. That would allow the Grey Knights to teleport down, because teleportation can be blocked with warp power. So if Angron knows it's coming, he could scatter them. So he has to actually be fully distracted.
And this is a big ask on this, because I love this part of the book, because they effectively go, hey, our plan is for you to get wrecked.
Yeah.
So we can do this. And the wolves agree, but.
Yeah, Logan demands a chat first. And in this chat.
He wants to look him in the eyes, what it says.
He wants to do a couple things. The first thing he wants to do is he wants to look them in the eyes. Logan's never met a Grey Knight. So he wants to go and meet these battle brothers of his and see what's going on. But the real reason he gets there is he wants to have a chat with them about after the battle. So the issue is Logan's been here for, it could be weeks. It's unclear how long this battle goes on before the Grey Knights arrive. But Armageddon is currently the site of the largest chaos incursion in Imperial history since the battle for Terra. This is it. They've never been this many. And actually, yeah, no, there were demons there. So yeah, this is the most demons we've had in one spot in the Imperium, this level of incursion that I'm aware of. Someone can correct me, but that's the most I'm aware of. Chaos is going to top that in a couple centuries. Don't worry, they'll blow this one out of the water. But this is something the Inquisition needs to have removed from all Imperial records.
And Logan is not cool with this because over the course of the time that they've been fighting, a bunch of the regular citizens have really stepped up. Logan calls them heroes of the Imperium because they've been so brave in the face of demonic incursion. And he wants to know, hey, what's going to happen after? We're going to win. Ready? Checkbox. We're the good guys. We're going to win this. What are we going to do after this?
Yeah. And the challenge is that there's an issue here. From the Inquisition standpoint, anyone who's seen this is a, they're not just a chance they could turn heretic. It's they could actually lead a heresy. People may have varying levels of knowledge of the archenemy. Because obviously in the teachings of the Imperial Creed, the Emperor is fighting against the archenemy. So people know it. But imagine people discovering how powerful that archenemy is. Man, that opens up a lot more doors for someone to turn heretic. The problem for Logan knows this. He knows the Inquisition is going to kill anyone who's seen a demon. And he's accepted that. Whether he's okay with this, he's accepted it. But what Logan did when he deployed down to Armageddon was he and his forces worked really hard to kind of corral Angron and the forces in this area just near Hive Primus. Hive Secundus has no idea of the demons present, and the other hives on the planet aren't even aware there's a war going on because he locked them all down. He put every hive into a lockdown. There's no communication in and out. There weren't really windows to start with, but those people have no idea what's going on. And he calls it out and he says, look, these citizens know nothing of this war. They are as pure of heart as they ever could be. They will be spared. Then the point Brad was making, the other challenge is he's talking about the Planetary Defense Force, who's really at this point more of a regiment because of, you know, this, it's been go time. They are staring down a demon holding a las rifle and fighting. And his point is these are heroes. These are not people who need to be exterminated. So these are heroes. And he's giving this speech to Lord Yoros, who is the Grand Master of the Grey Knights, Brother Captain Aurelian, Kisnaros, who's an Inquisitor, and a very soon-to-be important squad leader named Castian Hyperion. He's going to come up a lot pretty soon. They all look at him, and they all have a side conversation with Psychic, by the way, to each other, basically saying, so is he going to stop talking soon? Because it's not going to change anything that we're going to do.
Yeah, these guys are douches. Also, Logan's speech is pretty awesome in the book, by the way. He gives an impassioned speech about the heroes of the Imperium because he's just, these are common. He makes a big point of saying that non-space marines are just standing up to the hordes of chaos, and it's heroic, you know, when you're not a marine, when Brad stands there with my stick, you're like, yeah, that's pretty awesome.
But let's get to the battle itself, because what happens next is simply it's go time. Angron's forces get assaulted by the Space Wolves and the Planetary Defense Forces. They're distracted, and the Grey Knights teleport into an absolute nightmare. Like, this book, it's the Emperor's Gift. This is chapter 12 or so. The ones before that are fine. From chapter 12 to the end of the book, oof, fantastic. The beginning of the book, by the way, is how a Grey Knight is made. If you want to know that stuff, it's great. It's interesting, their backstory. But anyway, I want to talk about the cool part of the book. So chapter 12. The Grey Knights, in an instant, are next to Angron and a bunch of bloodthirsters. They describe it as the sky is raining blood. Not a trickle, but like a monsoon, where if they didn't have psychic vision, even through like their visors, like their with all the technology, that they wouldn't be able to see. And these are giant winged creatures who are tearing up so much dust that it's like being in like a dust storm of the Sahara. Oh, and there's a demon Primarch there, which is probably not ideal. Something that none of these people are prepared for. They've fought demons. They've fought stuff. They've never seen this. Angron looks at them and is not cool that they're there.
No. Angron puts on his boots of mighty ass kicking and decides, how many are there? I'm going to kill 109 and anybody that you know.
Yes. To make matters worse, the Grey Knights can't kill Angron. All they can do is banish him. He's an immortal being of Khorne. So you can wound him, which lessens his connection to the warp, but you have to do a sending to reference Final Fantasy X. Grey Knights, as soon as they land, begin a combination of actions. They start using their psychic powers to create like a network, you know, to channel their powers together to disrupt Angron and his forces. So this way they can banish him. At the same time, they've got all their runic weapons, which really are lame on the table.
But they're so awesome in lore. One of my favorites about this is they make a point of saying this. Every single bullet has ruins on it. And I can only imagine that there's like random servitors just sitting there going, this is bullshit, as they're inscribing all the bullets.
Yes.
Which is
one at a time. Yeah.
Yeah. Just, man, this is, God damn it. Yeah.
But they also have four staves and four swords that have it. All is designed to damage demons. Others are channeling force fields because that's also going to come up. You're fighting a being four or five times your size that's carrying an axe. Probably good to have a force field. Problem with a force field, though. This is where this starts to fall apart. The force field can stop a bloodthirster. Can stop a bloodletter, no problem. How about a demon prince, former Primarch?
And well, it didn't work out so well for him.
Yeah, so he starts wrecking. Angron starts cutting down Grey Knights. At one point, I think he takes like a dozen in one swipe with his sword.
Oh, he starts sweeping him through like Sauron in the beginning of Lord of the Rings.
Exactly. And what he starts doing is they put up force fields and he'll hit the force field once, and then he'll crack it on the second or third swing. He also swings pretty quickly. Now we get to Hyperion. Hyperion he's up to this point, a psyker of no great significance. He has a lot of power, but he's known to the stories. He's pretty emotional. So he had the psychic powers to be what's called a prognosticar, who's like one of the more powerful psychers of the Grey Knights. But he didn't really know how to channel his powers well, and he wasn't great at listening to orders. So great character for a story, for a novel. That's why he's the lead in the novel. As Angron is bearing down on him and his squad, Angron reaches Hyperion's best friend, Malkadiel. Mal, it's easier to Mal. Call him Mal, because Malkadiel's
still. I was saying, it's also what they call him in the book.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And Mal gets wrecked by Angron. He doesn't die, but he's about to die. And seeing this, Hyperion channels a bunch of psychic power and freezes Angron's sword in midair as Angron's mid-swipe, which, by the way, Angron was not cool with. He was not cool with at all. Very angry.
This is so fun because for me, this is like a Star Wars moment when you realize, oh yeah, I'm super powerful with the dark side of the Force, which I haven't been using, but I'm going to use right now. Because this is all rage power.
Yeah, and then Angron is basically yelling inconceivable, but with actual anger at it, back at him. As this plays out of nowhere, the blade breaks and explodes from Hyperion's power. The blade gives out, leaving Angron kind of staying there holding no blade, and now significantly diminished versus the Immaterium. Hyperion falls unconscious because he was actually using his own soul to power this. That's why when Brad was talking about channeling the dark side, he basically ran out of warp power and started using his own soul to power this. So it didn't go great. But as Hyperion falls asleep, Angron's reeling, brother Captain Aurelion steps up. And he just yells, Angron, face your judgment. And long story short, Aurelion defeats Angron, banishing him for 100 years and a day.
Hold on. He defeats him. However, he does not make it either.
Yeah,
it's not like he was like, I'm too skilled and I kicked his ass. You're like, hey man, what happened? Oh yeah, I got my arms pulled apart and beat with them, but I did banish.
Well, it's actually not clear how he dies to me. I don't remember how he dies. I thought it was just the use of the psychic powers killed him. That was my read on it. Maybe I might have missed it though. Anyway, but Angron's banished. The Space Wolves launch a full assault. And with Angron going, all the demons disappear right with him almost immediately. So you have this awkward moment where a bunch of cultists and world eaters are kind of standing around going, oh, so my big brother's not here anymore? Hey, guys.
Look at the time. I got to get out of here.
parlay? Question mark? You know,
like, I thought it was another guy named Bill. I'm real sorry. This is a huge misunderstanding. Awkward.
Yeah, this is less than ideal. So effectively, in an instant, it's not really, because it does take, this is more going after this, but in an instant, the war is really over. The war is won. This is that moment in a war where a battle turns, and that battle basically seals the fate for everything else. But the demon's gone. A couple of world eaters are left around the cultists. This is something that the space wolves, who took losses, but not catastrophic losses, and the planetary forces are going to mop up pretty quickly. So with that, the space wolves arrive on the battlefield where the Grey Knights had fought Angron, and they aid the Grey Knights in recovering what they can. This moment, the Hyperion and Mal, they basically pull bodies off of them so they can stand up again. They actually help people get back to their ships, where the apothecaries can start putting them back together again. But the key part of this is that the Grey Knights had succeeded, but it was incredible losses. 109 Grey Knights went to Armageddon. 13 remain. So pretty big loss. I mean,
hold on. 13 remained. One of them remained.
At least one of them is in a pseudo-permanent coma that they refer to. He likely won't come out of. It might have been 200 years later he might have popped out. But at the same time, this is going to matter a lot for the next bit we're going to get into. Hyperion is now a very big deal within the Space Wolves. The Space Wolves were not fighting over there while the Grey Knights were fighting Angron. The Space Wolves were looking at the fight of Angron while this was going on. They saw the blade break. They saw who made the blade break.
Oh, their skulls instantaneously started singing songs about the blade breaker.
Yes. And so the Space Wolves really are impressed by Hyperion. They think this is, because he checks all their boxes. He stood mano a mano against a demon prince and broke its weapon. No comment on Aurelian, who also did the same thing and died. But that's not important here, because we're writing a novel. We're not writing something logical. So
look, man, this guy's still alive. It all works.
Yeah. So the battle is over, and it's time to decide what to do with the people of Armageddon. And this is where the story starts to get ugly. So Grimnar had made his opinion known, but Grimnar is not part of the Inquisition, and it was their decision, not his. And they made one. The entire population must die. Every single being on Armageddon has to die. And there's a problem, though. And the problem is that they can't use an exterminatus, which is what they would usually use in these scenarios. Collect orbit, nuke it from space, virus bomb it from space. The planet is too valuable. This is a major hive world with tons of manufacturing. I mean, they don't even want to damage the buildings. So they have to kind of kill everyone one by one. And then they decide a really messed up plan. They're going to sterilize them all, so that way they can't ever have kids. And then they send them all off to work camps, which is really messed up. So they're going to take the entire population, move them out of the hives, put in work camps where they're sterilized, and they will work till they're dead. Problem solved.
Space wolves ain't going out like that, baby.
Well, it gets worse, though. The one that's actually worse, which is a bigger thing for the Space Wolves, is all the guardsmen who fought. The difference is the populace didn't see the demons, but they're aware of conflict. I think the argument the Inquisition would made to all of this would have been something akin to, they were too close to the powers of chaos. It's definitely going to affect their souls. Whereas the guardsmen saw Angron. So they decide for them, they're actually just going to kill all of them. Like with the populace, we'll let them die out. We're killing every single one of these. And to Brad's point, the ones who Jarl Grimnar referred to as heroes of the Imperium now get to get murdered in cold blood.
Ain't going out like that.
Yeah. So with that, we're going to break. And we're going to break because next week we're going to cover the Months of Shame, which is both epic and tragic at the exact same time. It is a really cool story. It has some plot holes to it. That's not important, but it is pretty epic and makes the Space Wolves look really cool.
That's so, right, baby.
Yeah. So next week, Space Wolf time. Surprise, extra Space Wolf cast. But until then, John Barsotti, Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you guys then.